found a place that might just be the perfect travel destination. There are beaches here that are up there with the world's finest. There are cosmopolitan cities that are small enough to be friendly, but big enough to have plenty to do. There are land and seascapes of almost impossible beauty. There's good food, friendly people, and cold beer. That place? It's Australia. It's a destination that is lusted after by overseas visitors, and yet criminally underrated by the people who live here. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're talking about a sunburnt country, a wide brown land, a place that is almost the perfect destination, Australia. What is there to do here? What are the parts that make it truly unique? What are the incredible attractions that are going to entice Aussie travellers to see their own home? Joining me to answer those questions are two passionate advocates of travel in Australia. First up, she's a contributing editor at Tourism Australia, the former editor of Australian Traveller magazine, and has seen more of this country than I think anyone I've ever met, Georgia Rickard.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming along. Also joining us, she's a writer for traveller.com.au who likes sunsets, long walks on the beach, and large quantities of mojitos, Sheridan Rhodes.
That sounded like an ad for a dating site. Hello.
Hi, Sheridan. Thanks very much for coming along. Now, guys, I feel like I'm going to be sort of devil's advocate a little bit today because I'm not always sold on Australia as a perfect travel destination. Do you think that's something that many Australians also feel?
I would say that 9 out of 10 Australians totally underrate their own country. And to that, I have to say, that's probably because they really haven't seen very much of it.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Would you go along with that, Sheridan?
I'd agree. Yeah, it's sometimes like you need to kind of go overseas to appreciate what you have here. So sometimes it comes later.
Does it just not feel exotic enough to people?
I have strong feelings about this because, yes, in a lot of ways it doesn't. But again, I will say it's probably because people haven't been to many places. I mean, if you think about it, Australia is a continent. It's as big as America. It's, you know, easily the size of Western Europe. It's enormous. It's so varied and there's so much to see and do here. You have these enormous canyons that no one's ever heard of. There's places that where humans still really have never even set foot. I mean, how much more exotic can you really get?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, maybe, I know from personal experience, you tend to have this idea that, oh, I'll do it later, you know, I'll do it when I'm retired. It's a place that can wait.
I think we take it for granted.
Yeah.
And it's maybe a little bit how we think about New Zealand too. You know,
right.
I know, like, my auntie and uncle are always like, I'm going to do that when I'm retired. And I think a lot of people in Australia think, yeah, I'll wait till I'm, you know, give up work and then I'll do that big trip.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is hugely underrated is Aboriginal culture. You know, we have this continuous culture which now could have been around, people are finding out, could have been around for 80,000 years, which is really incredible. And I don't think it's something that people really think of as a tourism thing in a way. Is that, what do you think, Georgia?
Look, I'm pretty confident once again that most Australians wouldn't consider it as a tourism draw card. But yes, our Indigenous heritage is unspeakably priceless. And you know, whether it's 80,000 years or 60,000 years or 40,000 years, people come from all over the world to see the pyramids, which are from, what, 2000 BC? And they flock there. They do these ridiculous pilgrimages. And, I mean, sure, that's very interesting. But 2000 BC versus, I don't know, 80,000 BC.
Yeah.
And especially since that culture is the world's oldest living culture. I mean, their descendants are still around today. How much respect can you have for it?
It's an intangible culture, which maybe makes it hard for people to kind of get a grip on how amazing it is and the experiences that they can have around that, because there is no
monuments,
you know, Instagrammable photo that they can suddenly picture in their minds.
Yes and no. I mean, there's certainly, we are discovering more and more. There's some fantastic 6,000-year-old remnants from an eel farm, which have been discovered in New South Wales. And, of course, there's all the rock art. Enormous outdoor art galleries that are so ancient, 30,000 years old. Go to Kakadu and check out that. You're right, it's not a pyramid. And aspects of their culture certainly are intangible. But there's a lot to see and do and learn about. And what you walk away with is is priceless.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't package the Indigenous experiences very well. Mm-hmm. Like, I know years ago I went to ATE and it was the first time they'd done something. You might remember this, Georgia, the Australian Tourism Exchange, where they were packaging Indigenous experiences and making them very attractive. Whereas before, it's hard to find out about those things. I mean, what you were just talking about, the eel farm, never heard of that.
Of course not. But I mean, I think that actually speaks to a, whether you call this a problem or not is debatable, but in general, Australians, we do not rate what we have to offer. We look at overseas and we look at these, you know, these international cultures and destinations, and we see that and we go, wow, that's just so amazing. And as you said before, it's really not until you've been overseas, you've experienced what there is to offer, that then you can look back on Oz and go, wow, maybe what we've got really isn't that bad after all. But because we don't rate ourselves intrinsically, and that's very much a part of our culture, we don't market ourselves like a lot of other cultures
do.
That's true. And so, you know, certainly as a journalist and as a magazine editor, when you're looking around and looking for stories to tell, that can actually be quite challenging, because you don't have small business owners out there shouting from the rooftops, telling their story or telling the story of their destination, as you would find in, say, France or in America.
Yeah. Mm. I thought one of the really eye-opening experiences for me was doing a thing called the Animal Tracks Safari in Kakadu. Oh. And basically you sort of spend a day with an Aboriginal elder whose name is Patsy, and she kind of shares some of her culture, and it's mostly about finding food, sort of bush tucker kind of stuff.
Wow.
And you spend the day kind of collecting all these different things, and then you go at the end and she digs a ground oven and cooks up this meal with sort of barramundi and magpie geese. And it's really fascinating stuff that I've never sort of even seen before. But Patsy was saying that once when she was digging the ground oven, this Australian guy says to her, "Oh, it's just like a hungi," and which is the Maori ground oven.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
She was like, she said, "Mate, you know, we've been doing this for 10,000 years. this is not a Maori thing. This is an Aboriginal thing." She's like, you know more about Maori culture than you know about your own
really
local
true,
culture.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's changing now in schools.
I don't know if it is.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
I
felt like I got a reasonable understanding of Aboriginal culture at school, but there's so much I don't know.
Yeah, so much. And yeah, like, why don't we want to go and do it? There's an amazing experience, apparently. It's up near Mossman, near the Daintree on Kuya Beach, and you can go mud crab hunting with these Aboriginal brothers. Have you heard about that? And
I have.
Do it with the spears, and then you cook it on the beach, and I've seen pictures of it. And that just looks incredible. And people that have done it just said it's like one of the best things they've ever done.
Right. I mean, Australian travellers go a long way to get an experience similar to that, don't they? You know,
that's
we
it.
Go to Africa
that's
or
right.
You know, we go to South America or something like that, where really it is actually happening in our own country. Yeah.
It's really true.
Yeah. What are your favourite types of experiences, Sheridan, in Australia?
Oh, I must admit, I do like the natural experiences. I think, like, you know, as you were saying, how can we beat our beaches and waterfalls and amazing rivers and, you know, beautiful islands and things like that? I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, one of my favourite places that I've been is up around Mossman, just north of Port Douglas, and the Mossman River. I just grabbed a snorkel in fins one day and just snorkeled down that river, and it was like one of the most magic things I've ever done. Free.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
Nobody knew about it. Someone just said, you should go and do that. And it was incredible.
Right.
It was just so beautiful.
Yeah. See, that is the charm of Australia.
It's true.
There are so many places like that just down the road that you can go to and go, holy crap, how is this not world famous? I mean, for example, there's a place in South Australia called Wilpena Pound, which is in the Flinders Ranges. It is six times the size of Uluru. It is enormous, and it looks like this giant crater. It's a natural geological phenomenon. I mean, if that were in America, there's no way that people wouldn't know all about it. But here, it's just casually sitting in the outback, you know. Yeah, of course, people go there, and you can do scenic flights, and there's a small robust tourism industry around it, but it's certainly it doesn't have the reputation that you know so many other icons have.
That's
worldwide
really true.
And there's so many places like that are just waiting to be discovered in Australia.
You're listening to Flight of Fancy. If you're enjoying the podcast, you can find stories by our guests and other great writers at traveller.com.au. Well, speaking of, you guys I know are both big fans of Lord Howe Island, which is not a place I've even been before. Sheridan, what's so amazing? I know. What's so amazing about it? What am I missing out on here?
I don't know. Well, for me, I used to look at my relative snaps. They used to go there, my grandmother and my auntie and uncle. And even back then, those really bad 80s photos, it just looked really special. Mm-hmm. And they used to go there every year.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is it?
So what are we talking? Where is it?
Where is it? It's off Port Macquarie, I think.
Yeah, it's a 2-hour flight from Sydney and from Brisbane, and it's literally on a latitude. It's between the two of them. So yeah. Port Macquarie is a great measuring
point. Yeah, off New South Wales. Mm-hmm. I think about 550 kilometres.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's 550 k's east of the mainland Australia.
Right.
Yeah. And it's just magical. I knew that I would love it before I arrived there, but when I got there, I was actually gobsmacked.
Right.
It was like, oh, my God, I cannot believe we have this in Australia. Even flying in Georgia, would you not agree how stunning it is?
I just think if you can picture this, a 12-kilometre long speck in the middle of an ocean, like really surrounded by nothing. I mean, it's exquisitely beautiful, but then the fact that the local population has gone, we don't want cruise ships coming here, we don't want mobile phone towers, so there's no mobile reception, we don't want any advertising, so there's no billboards.
We actually don't want cars. We've only got a few cars.
Right.
If you want your dog to, if you're moving there, your dog actually has to undergo like an interview process to be allowed.
It's true.
No cats. In fact,
400 visit a night. Is it beds a night?
I think it's. I want to say it's 300, but I mean it's some ridiculously low cap.
Okay. Yeah. And what do you do when you're there?
Oh, it's just total barefoot luxury. There's 20 something beaches. The speed limit for cars is 20 k's an hour. The kids can go to school as officially part of their school uniform. And we're talking, you know, as decreed by the New South Wales government, they don't have to wear shoes to school. So it's super relaxed. It's just, and you get around on bicycles, you explore the gorgeous, there are all these palm forests. There's a native palm there called the Kentia palm, which has become quite popular in mainland Australia as well because it's divine. There's all these forests. So you can just wander through them barefoot. And because it's this island on its own, it doesn't have any dangerous animals. Not a single one.
No predators,
right. Not even any poisonous spiders. It's totally safe.
You can just actually walk down to the beach. Say you're staying at one of the little places. You just wander down to the beach and there in front of you is enormous turtles just feeding in the water. Like, it's just kind of the nature is just all around you. Yeah. You feel you're really living in it.
Right.
Do you know what there are two quotes that I really love about it. And Sheridan, you will know these for sure. Sir David Attenborough called Lord Howe Island so extraordinary, it is almost unbelievable. And I think that really
that's a really good one.
It's, there's this freak warm current that drifts down from the equator, which has somehow guaranteed that Lord Howe Island is home to the world's southernmost tropical reef. So as you were saying, Sheridan, there's all these turtles there and the most stunning coral. And it's really effectively, it's too far south for that to exist.
Yeah,
so, you know, I mean, that in itself is a freak of nature. But the other story or quote that I really like about it is from a gentleman called Lee Abamonte. And he was the world's youngest American to travel to every UN recognized nation on Earth.
Oh, I haven't heard this one.
Well, when he was done, very cleverly, Condé Nast Traveler, the US magazine, asked him to write an essay about his experiences and expand on the places that he'd go back to and not. And I can't remember the exact quote, but he said something like, "I do not know what awaits man in the next life, but I can say that Lord Howe Island is paradise on earth." And it's true.
Beautiful.
It is exquisite. It is the most gorgeous, untouched piece of nature. And it's 2 hours from Sydney and Brisbane, and most Australians typically have no idea that it's there.
Yeah. Is it expensive to get there?
It is expensive. I think that is a big hurdle.
It's not expensive. I mean, sorry, it's not cheap, but it's not crazy. Yeah. I mean, you're looking at, what, $800 for a return flight. So,
sometimes, if you're lucky.
That or Bali. And,
I do find
I know what I prefer.
Cost can be a little bit prohibitive in Australia. It can. I know a few years ago, some friends of mine and I, we went over to Margaret River for the Easter weekend. And we stayed over there and we did some wine tasting and stayed in a, you know, reasonable apartment and then flew home again. And some other friends of mine went to Thailand and stayed in a 5-star resort and got massages every day and ate, you know, exotic, amazing food. And we calculated that we spent about the same amount of money.
Including the flights?
Including the flights.
Wow. Yeah.
And so, you know, I should say, you know, I've had some of the best experiences of my travelling career have been over on the west coast of Australia. I absolutely love it over there. But there is this sort of prohibitive cost that people need to get past to get to those places.
It can be expensive. It doesn't have to be. And I think one of the major things that you are paying for here in Australia is, which is very much underrated, particularly if you are Australian, but is privilege of place. I mean, this truly is one of the most isolated and untouched places on Earth, and Australians really don't.
I mean, Western Australia in particular, there is an entire coastline there with basically nobody
on it.
And they are, without doubt, the best beaches in the world, I think. They're
incredible.
Just incredible. Yeah. Just and so a road stunning. Trip up that coast is really something else.
Just amazing. And you think, what you were saying about, like, if that was in America, like, I was just thinking about when you're talking about we'll paint a pound. Like, it's like a Grand Canyon kind of thing, isn't
totally.
It?
Totally.
And there's, I mean,
you go to the Caribbean and people rave about the beaches there.
Oh, yeah.
And you walk out and you think, oh, it's okay.
We're so spoiled, aren't we?
We're extremely spoiled.
Maybe that's part of it, that we're spoiled because we've grown up with it, with the beauty, and also we sort of take it for granted a little bit.
This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel. Intrepid operates almost 100 itineraries in Australia, from Kakadu to the Great Ocean Road, the Great Barrier Reef to East Arnhem Land, and just about everywhere in between. Their small group tours are for anyone keen to uncover Australia's infinite stories and secrets. They employ local guides who offer up expert insights at historical and cultural sites, and their working partnerships with Indigenous communities go way back. Find out more at intrepidtravel.com. But now one of the things I want to pick up, Sheridan, you mentioned briefly, was coffee.
Coffee, I know.
Which really amuses me because we have such a cultural cringe about so many things in Australia, except for coffee.
Oh, my gosh. Australian, we're so proud of it, aren't we?
We really are. Everybody else's coffee does suck. It's true.
It's unless, okay, maybe New Zealand.
Yeah, that's
maybe
true.
Maybe New Zealand.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we are so lucky. And you can nearly go, I mean, okay, you can't get a great coffee in the Outback unless maybe you're at the Prairie Hotel in South Australia, had one good one there. But majority places you can, actually, like
absolutely.
Country towns and...
Yeah, see, look, I would even go as far as to say that I think you can have an okay coffee in the Outback. And an okay coffee to an Australian is... you know, a fantastic coffee to a Frenchman.
Right. Better than the Champs-Élysées.
Fair call.
Well, you know, once I was in the Kimberley, but I had this memory of going to a roadhouse there and snacking on, and this is so ridiculous, the middle of the Kimberley, you know, there's no main road around for 300 kilometres, and snacking on like a quinoa salad with, I think, goat's cheese or something, and having a latte.
Yeah,
I mean,
amazing, isn't
what?
It?
That's just, yeah, look, we are so spoiled for coffee and also for food. And in fact,
and food, yeah,
because incredible. Of my work with Tourism Australia, I've been, you know, privy to a lot of the research that they've done, especially with their Restaurant Australia campaign. And one of the really interesting things about the conception of Australians, perception of Australians and Australian food overseas is that most international visitors don't expect that it will be that great. And then after they arrive... And they actually try out our food and see the quality of the produce, but also just the range of what we've got to offer and the sophistication, because we do have quite a sophisticated dining culture here. They leave and they put Australian food up there as in the top 5 food or cuisines on Earth. Along
right.
with French cuisine.
Gosh,
and
it's
Italian.
Quite amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that
it's
is
funny
phenomenal.
When, a lot of times when I'm overseas, and I tend to talk a lot about food because I love it, and people say to me, oh, what are the Australian foods that you miss while you're away? And I always say to them, I miss Vietnamese food, I miss Greek food, I miss Italian food, I miss Thai food.
Miss pokey.
Yeah, and you can have all those things in one day if you want
you
to.
You can. It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, maybe it wasn't like that 15, 20 years ago, but it certainly is now, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the main thing that keeps coming up in this conversation is how spoiled we are and how much we just don't realise it.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I think also, I mean, maybe we do realise it, but Australians are pretty naturally adventurous, I find. And maybe it's that wanting to push the envelope and find things that are a little bit more exotic that pushes us outside of our comfort zone, which Australia is.
We do like to travel long distances and I mean, if give us a cheap ticket, we'll fly into a war zone, really.
Right.
I mean, don't you think? It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. And I think it's also, could it stretches back to that idea that you'll go back to England at some point, to the mother country, and that is, you know, that's the trip that you should be taking. And maybe we've still got a little bit of a hangover from that idea.
Maybe we do.
Where Europe is seen as being more important as kind of getting out and checking out our own place.
Maybe it's changing. I know I've changed since, I don't know if it's since having a child or, but I just so love holidaying in Australia now. Like, seriously, I mean, you know how many trips we get offered as travel writers and sometimes I look at the distances and I go, well, you know what, I would actually rather go to Tasmania and that's crazy. People say, well, why wouldn't you go to Greece or why wouldn't you go here? Well, actually, we've got so much here.
Yeah, the last couple of personal holidays I've been on have been in Australia
Where did you go?
To Margaret River, which was just a couple of weeks ago, which I absolutely loved, and also to the Clare Valley in South Australia.
So revolving around wine?
Yeah, there's a slight theme there that you may have picked up.
And that's interesting because, I mean, we've talked about food and coffee, but how great is our wine now too? Like, it's phenomenal. You guys been to Orange?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yep.
Blew my mind, the wine in Orange.
There's a really great tourism culture around wine, which you don't necessarily get in other countries, I've found. We tend to integrate those two things really well together. We have great wine, but we also have great experiences around wine. You know,
that's true.
There's nice restaurants and there's good tours of the wineries and
Margaret River, you can still go surfing.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's incredible. Yeah. Maybe that's quite unique about Australia in a way, that we have those kind of things. I don't know if you can go surfing in a wine region in France, for instance. I don't know.
Margaret River is actually, I don't know enough about wine tourism generally. And I think if you look at places like the Napa in America, not that I'm saying that that's a place you can go surfing, but there are definitely other countries that have evolved tourism industries, you know, around wine. But certainly,
in the new world, I find the old world not so much.
Oh,
it's a little bit more old school there.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But Margaret River in particular is a gem of the Australian tourism industry.
I feel like we should stop talking about it actually, because it's like it's perfect right now.
And yeah, don't spoil it.
Go there.
Yeah, that's right.
That's kind of it. I mean, and I feel like with Australia generally, and the way that the political climate is at the moment, and certainly with the rapidly declining number of wilderness spaces on Earth, Australia is very much set to become more and more of a sought after destination in the next 20 years. You know, as it is, it's considered on the world stage a boutique destination. Mm. It's very much a place where you go when you have disposable income, maybe you're a bit older, you've got a bit more time on your hands, or you're an adventurous youth. And that's, you know, I think that probably suits us, and because you don't really want, or I certainly don't, speaking on behalf of Australia, you don't want us to be overrun with, you know, hundreds of millions of tourists that's trampling true. Over everything in the next couple of years.
Mind you, we probably have plenty of beaches to spare.
Yeah, that's true. Well, actually, I was going to mention there are still more places that people have never even heard of.
Let's talk about
Cocos Keeling Islands, Georgia. I know you've been there, and I've barely even heard of this place.
Yeah,
I don't know what happens there. Tell me about it.
The Cocos Keeling Islands.
Crabs? No, that's Christmas Island.
That's
right?
Christmas. But you do have to fly via Christmas Island to get to the Cocos Keeling Islands. Look, they have to be one of my favourite travel destinations on the planet. So most Australians would never have heard of them. I recall them from being an enthusiastic stamp collector when I was, I don't know, maybe 10.
And super cool.
Yeah. Look, you
have a stamp from there.
Well, no, the Australian government released a series of stamps. This is so embarrassing. I really am showing my true colours.
Don't worry. I'm with you.
And I think the Cocos Keeling stamps actually did have crabs on them, but it must have been because the Cocos Keeling Islands were only integrated into Australia in, I think, 1984 as a territory. But basically, it's an atoll of 26, almost in a perfect ring of islands. It looks like the Maldives. It's halfway between here and Africa.
So it's part of Australia.
It's part of Australia.
Yeah. Okay, Georgia, hang on. Can you get a good coffee there?
You can. You can get a good soy coffee there.
What?
I know.
I don't believe it.
It's just bizarre.
Like the Maldives, you can get a good coffee, and we don't know where it is, and we've never heard of it. That's weird. So
what happens there? People live there? It's inhabited?
Absolutely inhabited, but there's only two of the 20. There's 27 islands in total, but 26 are in the ring. Two of those islands are inhabited, and the backstory is just hilarious. Basically, they were discovered in the 1600s, but their story didn't really begin until the 1800s when a gentleman whose last name was Clunies Ross, he actually sailed through, rediscovered them on the way to India, planted a flag in the ground and said, I'm going to come back here and retire in 3 years' time. So he did that, but by the time he got there again, another guy had also arrived and set up shop. And this guy
seems to be a familiar story in Australia, doesn't it?
Well, the second guy had actually brought a harem of 40 Malaysian women with him. Wow. Right? And Clunies Ross had showed up with all his sailors. So the two of them basically claimed an island for themselves on this ring, so on opposite sides of the circle. And one by one, the Malaysian women of the harem defected over to his side of the island, Clunies Ross. And eventually, that second explorer just left in a big huff, and he said, fine. So Clunies Ross was like, well, you know what? I am now the king of these islands, the Cocos Keeling Islands. And he and his descendants became, the self-styled kings of the islands for the next 200-odd years. And the Malaysian women and the sailors got on so well that they actually created their own little indigenous population called the Cocos Malay. And they are Sunni Muslims.
Would never have known that.
And when you go there, it's the most exotic, extraordinary place because you've got, women wearing the hijab, and talking in this Cocos Malay slang in this stunning tropical destination. So there's three, really crazy different flavors. Then you chuck in Aussies, because now it's an Australian destination, so you've got this Aussie twang. And then because Clunies Ross was Scottish, there's bits of Scottish heritage attached to their culture. So it's this real amazing melting pot, and yet it's this tropical castaway piece of perfection. And there's B&Bs that you can stay at, and I mean, it's tiny. There's, I think, maybe 650 people.
Why do we not know about this place?
Well,
is it really hard to get to?
There's only a couple of flights a week that go there. And I think actually until the 90s, it was pretty much reserved exclusively for the Australian government to go on junkets. You couldn't go as a tourist. And they've opened it up to tourists now.
And is there infrastructure there for tourists? Are there hotels?
There's B&Bs. There's no hotels. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to a few of the locals about this, and they reckon that we don't have more tourism promotion happening there because Australia is really holding on to that territory for strategic purposes, in case there's political instability or whatnot. Right. I don't really want to speculate too much, but you can't actually buy any property there. You can only lease the land for 100 years at a time.
Okay.
So, it's this idyllic, just exquisite place, perfect spot to go for a honeymoon. But,
or if you're on the run from the law or something. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think anyone would find you there, would they?
Oh, nice. Look, I certainly didn't want to be found when I was there. And I think that the local population is like that. They screen the news at WA time. So 4:30 in the afternoon is when the news screens. So no one even really cares about what's going on in the rest of the world.
Yeah, right. Sheridan, what are your kind of favourite spots in Australia that people may not have heard of?
They probably have heard of Bellingen, but it's definitely not sort of on the radar like you would say Byron Bay. And Bellingen's kind of near Coffs Harbour, so kind of halfway between Sydney and Brisbane, maybe, approximately. I think that's one of the most special spots in the world.
Yeah.
I've written about it a few times and actually always get letters from locals saying, please, do not write about this place.
What is really, is it that sort of Byron flavour to it?
It has. It's got the kind of hinterland aspect that you get around Byron, but these rivers that, it's called the Promised Land, this area that you go to where there's the Bellinger River.
Mm-hmm.
You cross a bridge. I think it's called the Never Never Bridge. It just sounds magic, but it actually is magic. You go there and you cannot believe it. You think the people who went there must have really thought, yep, this is what the Promised Land is like. I'm going to settle here. And it's idyllic. You've got beautiful rolling green countryside. You've got a big escarpment behind it. You've got this the clearest river. It's magic.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and good coffee in Bellingen. Really good coffee.
Excellent food.
And a very, very cute little kind of village. Have you been there, Ben?
Yeah.
I just love it.
Yeah, it's a very nice, relaxed, cool little spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that they're not going to be happy about us talking
about. They probably won't. I know. But it's like, come on, you've got to share it.
Yeah. One of the places I've really enjoyed travelling that not many Australians tend to get to is the Northern Territory in general.
So
I mean, it's this huge place with not many people, and there's just so many great characters up there.
Doesn't really feel like Australia, does it?
It doesn't. Yeah, I mean, you've got these endless highways and these road trains and these dusty little towns. And I went fishing up there. There's some really great fishing with these guys. Fishermen always tell really long stories about the amazing things that happened the day before.
Yeah,
these guys going,
you should have been
Barramundi, they actually jumped into the boat. This one literally jumped in and was flipping around. And I'm like, sure, mate, I didn't catch anything. But I just love spending time up there. It feels like, a completely different country.
Actually, Darwin felt like that the first time I went there. It just felt, I had a friend.
It's a bit Wild West, isn't it?
It was wild. It was like the last frontier.
Yeah.
But her girlfriend was working for the ABC up there, and it just felt so different from Sydney. You know, it was like, oh, my gosh, like, this is weird.
Yeah, it's so hot, and there's these beautiful beaches that you
can't swim in.
There's crocodiles.
Can't swim in.
And you have the NT News, which has all these ridiculous headlines about crocs and UFOs and UFO crocs, and it's just great. Have you spent a lot of time up there, Georgia?
Not enough. But, I have spent some time up there, but I agree with you, Sherry. I think that is a place that every Australian should go to because it is remarkably foreign. And not because it doesn't feel like Australia, but because it feels so Australian.
It's kind of true, yeah.
You know, it's just, it's filled.
Maybe what people envisage from overseas what Australia is going to be like.
That's probably true, actually.
Yeah. Yes.
They probably think Sydney is pretty much done.
Yeah, that's it. Crocodile Dundee walking around. You know, you've got your crocs and you've got your kangaroos, and maybe that's how they picture it to be.
I reckon you might be right. I mean, that being said, though, Darwin is closer to Bali than it is to Brisbane. I mean, it's closer to Asia than it is to any other major.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And so it's got this really Asian kind
flair
that's to
true.
It.
Yeah,
and that with the tropical climate and then the fact that, you know, half the town seems to be on the run or has moved there.
One of the things I loved about Darwin, I don't know if you guys did it, did you go to the Mindle markets?
Oh, yes.
You know, everyone just gathers there on the beach and it's like, this is the best show on earth, is the sunset.
Sunset over the
just
water.
Just sitting there with your Asian.
Some of the best street food you've eaten. Yeah.
And you sit on the beach and everyone just watches the sunset. I'm like, this is the best thing I've seen.
Yeah.
This is incredible.
I also really love that every third car there has a personalised number plate because every third person has just the most ridiculous personality.
I think you can tell a lot about a place by how many personalised number plates there are.
It's kind of interesting.
It's amazing. I've never seen another place with so many personalised number plates. It's really worth
looking.
You'll notice it. Now you won't be able to look away.
Oh, wow. Mm.
I mean, that's sort of part of the outback, and we've barely even touched on the outback, have we? It's this.
No.
What is it? 80% of Australia is officially the outback.
If you look, because I've done research on this, I think the Australian government technically defines the outback as what they call the rangelands, and I'm pretty sure it's 83% of Australia, which is
it's quite phenomenal.
That's a lot of Oz,
Yeah,
and it's much more than just flat desert.
Yeah, yeah. What do you do out there?
Well, I mean, it's not even out there because a lot of the coast is outback.
Right.
Is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
In Western Australia.
Yes.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of north of Perth all the way up to, you know, Broome and then around the Kimberley coastline. Gosh, we haven't even talked about the Kimberley. I mean, but it's you know, you've got savannas, you've got grassland, you've got beaches, deserts, there's mountains, there's all sorts of things. So it's like, well, what do you do there? Where do you begin?
I wonder though. I used to have a funny impression of the outback. I didn't really want to go. I thought it was going to be really boring.
Yeah.
Right.
Red dust.
Yep.
Really Aussie blokes.
Bad food.
Bad food. No coffee.
Yep.
No good coffee. I had this impression in my head, and then when I went, it was completely different.
Yeah.
It was like, wow, this is actually incredible,
Yeah,
well, I mean, it's a thousand different landscapes, isn't it? It's not just that red dirt sort
That's
of
it.
Open space that you think of.
I like to liken it to the idea of, I mean, traveling, road tripping across Australia is, you know, in a lot of ways can be quite like road tripping across America. I mean, if you think about the number of different landscapes that you would see, you get the same variety in Australia. And it's just, I mean, from, you know, alpine, gorgeous hills with, you know, with daisies on them to you know, the bright red desert to scrubs and everything in between. Not to mention all the gorgeous water holes, because I think that's the other thing people think, oh, no, it's dry and it's dusty.
I mean, we haven't even touched on national parks yet, have we? There are some incredible national parks. Yeah.
Billabongs.
Some of our water holes are the world's best swimming experiences.
Maybe it's the massive distances to get in between these things that can sometimes, you know, I know it does put me off a little bit. Like, I don't want to jump in the car and just drive into the outback.
No.
You need a lot of preparation. You need a plan. You've got to go in the right weather and all
right
of that.
Right car, all the right supplies.
And there is big gaps in between of nothing.
Okay, so here's the thing. When you get out there, though, your mindset changes. You know how you hear the jokes about people who, you know, live on an outback farm and they say, oh, yeah, just up the road. But when they say up the road, they really mean 2 hours away.
Yeah.
It just becomes normal. It's amazing how quickly your mind just adjusts and you're like, oh yeah, 2 hour drive, no dramas, away we go. And believe it or not, a lot of the roads are so well maintained now that you don't need anything more than, you know, a little Hyundai gets. You can just get in your 2-wheel drive and as long as you've got some air conditioning and
yeah.
So you're not trying to cross the Nullarbor
Although to be fair, I know my grandmother did cross the Nullarbor back in the '60s in a 2-wheel drive and it's very doable.
There you go.
And there's roadhouses all along the way now, and because you're in an outback area, there's a really strong sense of community. Not like what you would think at all. It's very much hand painted signs, lots of, you know, friendly waves. If anybody's pulled over on the side of the road and broken down, absolutely people will stop and, you all right, mate? And it's a very inclusive feel that you get when you're so far out there. People really look after each other, much more so than in the cities.
Yeah. You're listening to Flight of Fancy. If you're enjoying the podcast, you can find stories by our guests and other great writers at traveller.com.au. So, guys, we unfortunately haven't had much time to talk about cities, but we do have some great cities here. What are your favourites?
For me, it's a toss-up between Hobart and Sydney.
Oh, right.
Love Hobart because it's just filled with cool people. And, in fact, it was only, like, six generations ago that it was a place of, you know, criminals and convicts, like the worst of the worst, and they forged this crazy frontier town that's, you know, now filled with creatives and rebels and entrepreneurs of all sorts. And Sydney, of course, because, I mean, hey, just that harbour, the lifestyle, you really can't go past it, can you?
Yeah, for sure. How about you, Sheridan?
I love Sydney and I grew up in it, but I would have to say Melbourne.
Ooh.
Yes, Melbourne is, I think, our coolest city in Australia.
Yeah.
It has...
Just ask them, they'll tell you.
Culture, food, coffee. It doesn't have the big flashy harbour. But it lacks in
culture
that.
Is amazing.
The culture
it's
is amazing,
really
and
great.
And I must admit, I'm a big fan of Brisbane, and I think Brisbane is really, really changing a lot.
Yeah, well, I was going to mention Brisbane as well. Brisbane, I used to live in Brisbane. I grew up in Brisbane, and I used to work for this magazine. And pretty much every week, the editor would get us to write a cover story on how Brisbane's come of age. And we've been writing this thinking, oh, this is so boring. But now I feel like it actually has. There's some really great stuff there.
It's a really happening
city, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Particularly around the West End and New Farm, Fortitude Valley, Tenerife. There's some really cool stuff. There's some great bars, great restaurants.
Just go and look at the houses. Gosh, I'd give my right arm for one of
those
Queenslanders
and Ashgrovians. And,
see, I think the take home from this is that even if you live in one of those cities, you really should actually take the exercise of acting like a tourist. Just going out for a weekend and appreciating your backyard.
Yeah.
You see it through the eyes of a tourist and it's like, wow, where I live is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, I actually really enjoy having friends from overseas come to stay because then I take them around my city and you get to see it from a whole different perspective and realise, you know, just from seeing their reaction, like, I live in an amazing place.
Yeah.
And just seeing those red buses, the open-top buses go past. I love seeing that because it just makes me think people have spent a lot of money to tour around.
To get here.
To get here and hang out here.
And to hang out at Darling Harbour. I was just walking past there and they've got their big bowls of sangria and I'm like, wow, that's amazing. They've flown all that way to sit there with some
drink sangria and eat terrible food. Good one, guys. We also haven't even talked about the Barrier Reef. This is one of the wonders of the world, essentially.
And
I think that's so Australian of us to just not talk about the Great Barrier Reef, which is a huge draw card internationally. It's one of the biggest attractions for international visitors. And yet, you know, when you go out on those boats to actually visit the reef, it's like 98% international visitors and 2% curious Australians.
And I know probably the northern end around the Whitsundays sort of area is the most well known, but I actually really love the southern part of the reef. Places like Heron Island and Lady Elliot Island,
so
these kind
amazing.
Of little coral keys that that are just incredible diving, great snorkeling. You know, there's just it's really kind of stripped back and natural and beautiful.
I think you don't really appreciate how big it is, and well, I never did until I actually saw it from the air. And I've seen it from the air a few times now, and each time I'd get probably like your reaction, Georgia, when you went to Uluru. I get really emotional. I'm like, this is just so phenomenal. And it stretches such a long way and changes such a long way. And you're right, like down the southern end is spectacular, and there's hardly anyone there.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, cabins and bunk beds that you're staying in a lot of these places. It's really stripped back, but that's part of the charm for me.
I agree.
Well, just on that idea, to finish up with, I was going to ask you guys for to name one experience in Australia that you think everyone should have. I know it's difficult. It's tough. But
one,
you know,
of our favourites? Is that
okay? Sure. Let's go one of your favourites. You don't have to give away the true gems,
you
maybe.
Go first.
No,
Georgia.
I was going to say you go first. Ooh, that's really hard.
Oh, okay, Ben, you go first.
I was going to listen to you guys talk for a while and then get into mine.
I did an amazing thing recently, and it's not accessible to everybody. It was called the Whitehaven to Wineglass experience. Mm-hmm. It was phenomenal, and it's out of the reach of a lot of people. But it was staying on at Qualia on Hamilton Island, mm-hmm. going out to Whitehaven, doing these incredible experiences, and then flying south to Tasmania and doing the Wineglass experience and staying at Sapphire and all of that. That blew my mind. I mean, that I'd save up for that trip as an Australian and just see the best of Australia. It was just phenomenal, all served on a plate over a week. That was incredible.
You are spoiled.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. That does sound truly incredible.
You don't need to spend that much money to have that sort of experience in Australia. There was lots of people out at Whitehaven Beach that, you know,
doing the backpacker thing.
But it blew my mind Australia. Yeah.
How about you, Georgia?
I'm going to cheat. I think that everybody should do the big lap.
Right.
But
so the thing they should do is see all of Australia.
All of it. Okay. How much time do we need?
That's something that I would love to do a little bit later. But the other thing that I do think that everyone should do, and I think they should do it now, is go to Uluru.
Yeah.
I know that must seem like a really predictable response.
No, I don't think so. And it's an amazing place.
The level of emotion and the sense of spirituality that you get from being somewhere so open and so vast and so quiet is really quite unlike anything else. Mm. And it's not just Uluru that's incredible. You know, 25 kilometres away, so, you know, next door in the same national park is Catajuta, which is, you know, formerly known as the Olgas, which most Australians don't really know much about, and that's partly because it's so sacred to the local Anangu people that there's a ban on most forms of commercial photography. So you actually can't tell the story of Catajuta to the world.
Yeah.
So when you get there, and Catajuta is bigger and wider than Uluru and at least as spectacular.
It's just phenomenal. Mm.
It's just...
And don't climb Uluru.
Oh,
There's no need.
I mean, these days you can
walk around,
jump
it,
up
to
in,
the
a,
stories,
in a plane, and do a skydive just over the top, which is amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you know, there's so many things to do out there, and it really is one of those places that will leave you with a great respect for our land.
Yeah, great advice. Mm. Yeah, and my one experience would be to grab a couple of beers or a bottle of wine and go and sit on a beach in Western Australia and watch the sunset.
Alcohol was going to be involved?
Yeah.
Well, look, you can not take those things if you want, but I find, you know, for the full experience, just sunsets in WA, you know, over the ocean, And you can. There's a very good chance that you'll be the only person sitting on that beach, the only person for miles and miles around.
And it's free.
It's beautiful. It's free. And it's something that people would pay a lot of money to be able to experience.
I agree.
Cheers Amazing. To that, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cheers.
Guys, I want to say thank you so much for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure. If you would like to read more of Sheridan's work, you can find her at traveller.com.au or also roadswelltravelled.com. If you'd like to read more of Georgia's work, you can find her at australia.com or also instagram.com/GeorgiaRickard. Thanks for listening to the podcast. To subscribe to Flight of Fancy, go to iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. And we'll see you next time.